And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
You know, we have cough buttons here, and that's what they're for. When you cough, you're supposed to use them. Hence, well, I didn't. So, in case that came across air and blew people's... It did?
Well, yeah, that came across. I heard it in my ears. Eric heard it in his ears, and the audience heard it in theirs.
Well, with that, welcome. I just hacked up a lung. Okay.
No intro music's covering that up.
Oh, live radio, live TV. What are you going to do? You know? Eric says, well, hit the cough button. That's what it's there for. Now that I've coughed up a lung, you want to bring us in? Go ahead and bring us in.
Yeah, we're glad to be here on this Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017, on this 54th anniversary of the JFK assassination. And we have a show tonight that we're going to address the John F. Kennedy assassination from 7:30 to 9. We're going to have St. John Hunt, the son of E. Howard Hunt, joining us, and he's going to give us his story on what his father told him in a deathbed confession and the investigation that he conducted in the search for the truth dealing with the John F. Kennedy assassination. Excuse me. So it should be a fantastic hour and a half with him, and then Pastor Langford will be joining us as he does each Wednesday in hour three and on this eve of Thanksgiving. Now, we have the busiest travel days of the year today. We see that as one of the main headlines on Drudge. We talked about it a little last night. So hope everybody who is listening to our show has traveled and got to where they're going safely or is en route and will arrive safely. And we hope you certainly enjoy the holiday tomorrow and get to spend some time with your family. But we got some news and current events we're going to get into here in the first hour. And, Dad, I don't know where you want to start.
I want to start by getting an oxygen tank rolled in here and sorry about that. No, there's a lot of news. By the way, Saint, gotta quit those cigars, Cuban cigars. Saint John Hunt, I just want to say this. You know, this is going to be a very, very intense, in my view, an intense interview, and. I want to thank Bill McIntosh of Casa Media for this, but this is about, this is going to be about a father-son relationship as well as much as the Kennedy assassination. Of course, you know, the Rolling Stone didn't do, gee, go figure, the Rolling Stone did not do, E. Howard or St. John Hunt any favors in their write-up. Boy.
That's what you said.
Yeah. In my view, and there's a lot of good information. I took some notes from some various books, and I really believe 54 years hence. By the way, you know, you gotta understand that St. John Hunt lost his mom. It was 1972 in a plane crash. Remember that? So that was Flight 553 that crashed outside of Chicago, Midway. And some say, and the weird thing about that was the FBI was on scene a full 10 minutes before everyone else, just, you know, happened to be in the area. But anyway, yeah, well, there's a lot to start. Look,
but you know what? Before we get too far, I wanted to tell you this, because I saw this, I think it was last night. If it wasn't last night, it was the night before. I was watching the Weather Channel, and there was a show on titled, So You Think You'd Survive. And what it did was detail a number of incidents from plane crashes to hiking accidents, and it puts you in the shoes of the people who were stranded or abandoned or you know, needing to be rescued, and takes you through the life. Well, one of the examples, situations that they did on this show was the plane crash in Hawaii with Loretta Fuddy. But interestingly enough, in this clip where they talked about it for about 15 minutes, they never mentioned her once, nor did they address the fact that anybody died on the plane crash. They went through it. They showed some of the video. They blurred out her face. They blurred her out. Never mentioned her once. and did the survival scenario. But I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know if you want to look into that any further. And I don't know how many other people saw that or even recognized it as the Loretta Fuddy plane crash. But it was, and it was very poorly represented by the Weather Channel. Not that you'd expect politics from it, but...
Well...
They could have told the truth about what really happened.
What was the Weather Channel doing? I don't quite understand what that whole deal was about, but that whole Fuddy plane crash was a lot... was. You know, there's a book we had, well, just go back and search of, Loretta Fuddy on our YouTube channel and you'll find the real story there. I have no doubt in my mind, I've got no doubt in my mind that there's nothing, there's nothing true that you read about that particular crash except for, the individual who did the research, the individuals who did the research.
Well, what was interesting about it, they never mentioned Loretta Fuddy, and they claimed that everybody survived the plane crash, and they said it in a way where you could argue, yeah, well, a woman died in the water from something unrelated to the plane crash, but it was interesting the way that they portrayed it as a, you know, some kind of heroic survival situation, like these people were stranded in the middle of nowhere 500 miles off the shore in real deep water, which that wasn't the case. But I find that to be interesting. The way that they used that example.
Stand up on the where they were at.
Yeah. Since it is on this eve of Thanksgiving, a Thanksgiving tradition of the president pardoning the turkey was ongoing
today. I love it. I love it. He almost did. What did he say? He said, I love, seriously, the way Donald Trump had talked about not pardoning the turkeys.
Yeah.
To me, that's pure Donald Trump, and that it's just funny to watch. I mean, you got to have a sense of humor.
Well, the media and the left and some on the right definitely do not. We looked at this earlier from AM Joy Reid on MSNBC to a number of people. You got to read some of these tweets about what the president got as far as backlash on Twitter. The tradition of presidential turkey pardoning every Thanksgiving should be a lighthearted, fun event devoid of politics. But because of the media's hatred for President Trump, even this pastime has been turned into a political gripe fest. As Trump carried out the annual holiday tradition, cracking jokes along the way, as presidents before him have done, journalists took to Twitter to complain about any and everything they could think about the pardon, showcasing their inability to take a joke even for a moment. Now, I want to go through some of these tweets.
By the way, speaking of turkeys, I went turkey hunting today.
Did you get anything?
Well, I'll tell you something. I got a turkey, but man, the shoppers in the frozen food aisle after I shot the shotgun, they just went every which way. But I got the turkey. I brought it home. Citation for firing a weapon inside the grocery store. But I got a 22-pound turkey.
Well, congratulations, and that's a good job. Hunting... capturing a kill on your first hunt out.
Yeah.
Can't beat that.
And they were sitting right there. I don't know. I understand what the big deal is. I had no problem.
No, that's pretty funny. Back to Trump's turkey hunting or turkey pardoning. Joy Reid issued this tweet. Gotta say, these traditions, the turkey pardon, and other cutesy things presidents do are lost to the ether for me when Trump performs them. The legal, ethical, and moral clouds over his presidency are like a film on the camera lens. That was not a funny one, but there are a few in here. Here are a few that are pretty good. You have a Jess Dweck says, at tomorrow's turkey pardon, Trump is going to pardon Joe Arpaio again, then stomp both turkeys to death. Another one. Let's see. Conan O'Brien, President Trump didn't pardon the whole turkey, just the white meat. I thought that was pretty funny. And Jim Acosta, good gravy. Sounds like Trump was considering overturning Obama's final turkey pardon. I thought that was a little humorous.
Well, and that was the intent. I think the humorous intent of Donald Trump going in and overturning that was supposed to be funny. Don't make it racist. Really, you got to go there, Conan O'Brien. You got to go there.
Well, yeah, he does. But I see that as a joke.
Fine. You know what? I could make some off-color joke about a racist, and yeah, I guarantee you. Well, or a racist joke. But see, the left gets away with this. I don't agree with that. Keep it on the clean side, if you will, without the racism. You don't need to do that. Pardon only the white meat. Come on. Okay, you take a joke, and then you, to me anyway, then you, because what if that would have been Obama?
Right.
Hey, we're only right. He's only going to pardon the dark meat.
It would be unacceptable, racist, and hateful.
Yeah, I guarantee you, just from me saying that, I'm going to get emails for saying this. It's ridiculous, you know. It really is. But I'll tell you, well, one of the issues too, and I hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving, and I hope that that y'all have time with your family, friends, and whatever. You have great food, and I hope you're bringing us. By the way, are you doing a show tomorrow?
Yes, we are.
All right, you and John are doing a show tomorrow. I'm going to be doing a show tomorrow as well. Although I'm going to help my wife with the turkey, but I guess I can run in.
You killed it. It's only fair that you clean it and cook it.
Yeah, I was surprised that, you know, the pellets must have just brushed those feathers right off there. But and I don't know what the bag deal was, but. Is in a bag, and anyway,
no, real quick, you're doing a show tomorrow.
We're going to do a show tomorrow.
I'm not sure what time we're going to do it. We might do it early in the morning, which it would still air on Global Star, Channel 3 between 2 and 3, but the archive or the live and archive link on Blog Talk might come out a little bit sooner. Whenever we do complete it, we're going to publish it there. And today, we really did a Thanksgiving show today. And we put that show up on YouTube because we didn't really get into any news or politics. It was just a setback, laid-back show where we talked about a number of things from gratitude to the origin of Thanksgiving and who and why that came about. And it really was a good show. So that's up on YouTube for people who don't want to go elsewhere to find the show.
All right. And you can also go to BTR Blog Talk Radio. Just go to Hagman Report and click on the options. Blog Talk Radio for my show as well as Global Star Radio Network, but BTR there. And also I would ask everyone to click the follow buttons on respective shows. That elevates us in the visibility factor of Blog Talk, and there are good people there. But I got into today really what the Uranium One, criminal syndicate's all about, and I think that you've got multiple scandals. You're getting into the news. You got multiple scandals right now plaguing the previous administration or administrations, in particular Obama. You've got the email. You got the unmasking of the NSA wiretaps. You've got the politicizing, the weaponization of the intelligence officials. I got all in all this in my morning show, but. The overlapping criminal scandals. If we don't see a criminal prosecutor, or if we don't see some sort of Watergate-style hearing against the congressional hearing against the former administration and current people currently in the Justice Department, I don't know. We've lost our country, I believe, because the level of criminality that exists and lawlessness that existed. It was ongoing during the Obama administration. It's beyond description.
Mm-hmm.
You have Obama, you got Rice, you've got all of these people unmasking names, the weaponization of our intelligence services. You've got the weaponization of the IRS against conservative and Christian conservative groups. Everyone being held or no one being held accountable for any of this. And
yep.
This is, to me, one of the most important factors today, because if we do not seek justice for the sake of justice, then this country is gone, as far as I'm concerned. And I would lay it on the feet of Donald Trump, and I would lay it on the feet of the Department of Justice to in fact, do this. And we must do it. And we must hold accountable the people such as Obama and Clinton and Rice and Jared and everyone and Comey and Mueller, even. So you cannot have a special counsel. Investigate himself. So we need a secondary counsel. We need to get rid of Mueller, put in a secondary counsel, get rid of this sham, this dog and pony show, of the special counsel for the Trump Russia collusion. It doesn't exist. Now, what does exist, and I'm fighting with people on social networking about this. I'm not really fighting. I'm putting out the information. They're slandering me and trying to take me down. The bottom line is this. what we saw during the Obama regime was the weaponization of intelligence, the weaponization of the media. And that's one thing that no one's really talking about. The weaponization of the media that prepared and really laid the groundwork for what we're seeing today. And especially during the campaign, how the media had just gravitated toward Obama and Hillary and, of course, was used as a weapon against Donald Trump at every turn. But the American people knew different. They knew better. And, of course, they elected Donald Trump. Now, do I think that I'll just leave it this way. I believe it's more of a movement than a man. I think the movement of Donald Trump represents more of what's really taking place than the man of Donald Trump. So bottom line is, but we need to hold these people accountable. And I'll tell you what, Greg Jarrett on Sean Hannity said, he was asked, how worried should Hillary Clinton be based on the FBI informant coming out now? And you have to understand, the informant has 50,000+ pages of documentation, audio and video recordings. So, how should
how worried?
15 out of 10. Okay.
Did you see
Greg Jarrett said?
The FBI informant claims that he was running the other day, and there was a man on his running trail, where he said if he did not have his gun, he believed he would have been killed.
Well, I didn't see that, but I would prefer not to talk about this man or even talk about his name. I believe he's in danger. I really do. But however, I think enough has already, I think he has given enough to others and enough standalone testimony where if something happened to him, it would still go forward. However, it's always good in a trial and attorneys listening to this and police officers listening to this, you know what it's like to have the firsthand trial or firsthand testimony to verify, authenticate documentation, because there's always going to be it's edited or whatever. So you need that documentation firsthand, not secondhand or thirdhand. So, but yeah, I believe that his life is in danger. And
yeah, absolutely, it is.
But was he really running?
I don't know. I read an unconfirmed report that says he was jogging and had this encounter.
Man, I don't know. The last I heard, he was just off of chemo.
Okay. Well, maybe the report was sensational.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It could be. I'm not even sure what his health status is, but I do know at one point it was pretty poor. So
not to switch the topics too far, but another speculative report I saw is saying that Joe Biden is one of the people who are on the list of politicians who were part of that $17 million in the last 20-year sexual harassment settlements in Congress.
Boy, that would be a big surprise to me. You know, I just, judging by all the pictures.
Joseph Watson did a video today on, and that says it all in that video.
I'm going to tell you, if you watch the body language of the people, you don't even have to be a body language expert. Watch the body language of the kids, the women, tell me that there's not something off there with Biden.
Mm-hmm. Well, reports are coming out from Secret Service that he liked to swim naked, that they would make up excuses to get the women out of the room. There was an encounter that a Secret Service agent had. Apparently, his wife took a picture with Joe Biden, and Joe Biden cupped her breast, forcing the Secret Service agent to physically confront him, which got him suspended for a week. And I think you're going to hear a lot more stories like this coming out as time progresses, because there was an article on Drudge yesterday. Donna Brazile was interviewed in relation to who is going to run for president on the Democratic side in 2020. And she said there could be up to 25 candidates that are rolled out for that election. Anybody from Kamala Harris to Joe Biden.
Kamala Harris, I'm going to tell you what a piece of work that would be.
De Blasio, Rahm Emanuel, they were all on the list. And many people, many articles have polled the voters, some of the voters, and they say that as of right now, Joe Biden would win in a head-to-head against Trump in 2020 election, which I don't buy for a second. But the Congress is becoming riddled with sexual scandals, as we've seen in Hollywood and in parts of the media. And it's drawing a lot of crazy responses from the media. We really don't have to get into this today, as we only have a few minutes left, but keep your eye on the hypocrisy and the double standards of so many in the media today, that even on The View, with one side of their mouth, they rip Kellyanne Conway for saying that she supports Roy Moore or wants Roy Moore to win the election because she's supporting, you know, some kind of sexual predator. Then they turn around and talk about how, you know, well, this was a mock grope with Al Franken, and it's a slippery slope. We can't ask him to resign. And they turn around and are guilty of the same behavior that they're accusing Kellyanne Conway of. It's just this constant hypocrisy. And, we were talking today on the other show. What's the reason that the media is so rabid about this anti-Christian, anti-white, you know, transgender, just morally bankrupt? Everything that they're promoting is morally bankrupt. And I wonder if it's not so much for the small percentage of people out there who believe in it, or is it for exactly the results it is getting, for to put the people on the right, the Christians, get them in an angry mood, make them uncomfortable, get them to possibly, slip up and fall into these emotional traps that are set. And I wonder, I bet it's a lot of both that we see for reasons that they are doing this. I mean, obviously they're not planning on airing a broadcast promoting transgenderism. They don't believe they're going to convert any Christians to believing that their side is right. So why are they doing this? So at the pace and that they are.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Because
that's what I want to know.
I think one part hubris, one part stupidity.
I mean, it's just so far out there what they're promoting anymore.
Yeah, it's almost as if they live in a world where they their own little bubble. And I think that's not that's just weird. We have a conference. Do we agree? Was I sleeping when I agreed to a conference?
No, we. This was something that's upcoming in April that Coach Dave was putting together, and I believe it's April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, or 22nd, 23rd, where Coach is getting together you, me, I believe Russ Dizdar, maybe Pastor Langford, Paul Begley, a number of people, Pastor Mike Spaulding, to come together for a conference in Ohio. I'm not sure if it's in Akron or Canton.
I'm bringing my dog.
Oh, I'm sure you'll be able to. The last, I don't know if it was Coach's conference or if it was that Nephilim Mounds conference, but we had a lot of fun last time.
Oh, yeah, but I don't know. Well, watch for that. Were we supposed to mention that tonight?
No, Pastor Paul Begley wanted to mention it on his TV show tonight. Right. So that's what that was about.
Because right, I would know here, it says conference mentioned. I don't know what even, I don't remember writing that down,
Begley.
All right.
And we have just a few minutes
left. Did we run out the clock yet or no?
Not yet. Just a few minutes left before the break, before we bring in St. John Hunt. And if you can't tell, it's almost like a Friday, the atmosphere.
Isn't
here,
it
because
Friday?
We have the holiday tomorrow. I want to touch on this story. Since the attack, Rand Paul hasn't taken a single breath without pain.
Nice.
The average person takes 20,000 breaths a day since November 3rd. Rand Paul has not taken a single one or gotten a good night's sleep without excruciating pain and coughing. Why do we bring this up? Because we have not really, we saw what the news brought out, trying to blame Rand Paul for this attack because his lawn clippings were not cleaned up or he wasn't a good landscaper. But the person who attacked him, the charges have not been raised, and I'm starting to wonder why. We saw the severity of his damage, the 6 broken ribs, punctured lung, fluid in the lungs.
It's a federal violation to attack a sitting congressman or senator.
And not only that, you know, it was an unprovoked attack. It was a cheap shot when he wasn't even looking. And this guy is walking away without a felony charge. And I find that I don't understand why. Is this political bias in the prosecutor's office? Or is there something else going on behind the scenes, which I don't really believe because we've seen Rand Paul talk about this. And he's not calling for, you know, mercy on the guy. He's not saying throw the book at him, but... we saw the article last week where they said expect the charges to increase. The charges have not went anywhere, and I want to know why that is.
Yeah, I would as well, and I would suspect Rand Paul would as well. However, it's interesting because as a victim, you don't make yourself. It could be seen as this kind of a weird thing if you kind of push. For federal law to be enforced as, you know, using yourself as in the victim status, you shouldn't have to. The law is pretty clear. You attack, you assault a sitting congressman, it's a federal violation. So federal law should take care of it. Yet, the Department of Justice is not filing federal charges against this. It's not about the lawn clippings. Anyone who believes that is, or about the landscaping, as you said, right. Anyone who believes that is absolutely, you know, I got a bridge to sell you in the middle of a,
yeah, the guy was,
it's BS.
The neighbor's been trying to sell his house for 10 years.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like,
gee, what's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, it really makes me angry that we see, you know, just imagine if this was, Chuck Schumer who was the victim. You know, the play that would have gotten the media. The
maybe Rand Paul actually just fell down off of his Stairmaster. Or what happened to Harry Reid? What was that?
Yeah, no, he was exercising, apparently. Yeah. The black eyes.
And it really, yeah. You know, I'm just so done with this. I cannot wait until we have tomorrow off. Tomorrow, the big show. And by the way, Doug Hagman Radio Show is going to be on live as well as, your show. But we have tomorrow night off. I'm just so thankful because, you know, you just get to a point where what else is there to say? Unless you want to grab a musket and charge Washington Hill. You know, it's almost, no?
No, you're right.
AR-15? Why?
Talk about freedom. Did you see the video that came out of the North Korean soldier getting shot while trying to escape to the south?
Yeah, and he had a bunch of parasites in him. Is that the one?
Yeah. Well, they released the video of him making his mad dash from the north to the south, getting his car stuck and getting out into trying to run and then being gunned down.
Now, that's something to be thankful for. You're not over there.
Right, and he woke up out of his coma or out of the surgeries, and he was crying. And you guys got to read the story. It's a very touching story about what the guy asked for when he woke up. He just wanted to hear some music from South Korea and see the TV to make sure he was really there. And you talk about, you know, doing all you can to strive for freedom. That is a great story. When we come back, St. John Hunt will be with us on the 54th anniversary of the John F. Kennedy assassination. We're going to dig into this when we come back on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Edition of the Hagman Report. Don't forget to check out the website, HagmanReport.com. There we post a bunch of news stories every day, and we have original content also. Peter Chalka has a new article up there. Mark Levin gets his own show at Fox News. That's a great piece. Go there and read that. And check the show daily. We update it every single day, except usually on Saturdays.
After the show, Peter, can I call you after the show, Peter? Peter, are you there?
I'm sure you can.
I'll tell you what, or give me a call after the show. I'll give you a call. It's a West Coast, East Coast thing, you know. But all right.
Before we get to St. John Hunt, just want to bring you a quick word from Greenovative. From tomorrow morning until the end of day Monday, Greenovative is offering their sale, their Black Friday through Cyber Monday sale. You can get 30% off any and all individual items at their site, greenovative.com, using the promo code Hagman. The sale only comes around once a year, and I believe this is the biggest discount that he's offered for everything from his portable rechargeable battery power pucks and so much more. We got the mission pack that's still for sale there, as well as all the accessories that you need. Go to greenovative.com. Again, 30% discount from tomorrow until the end of day Monday using promo code Hagman on all individual items at the store. That's greenovative.com.
All right. Now, this I have to tell you, folks, this is an interview I have been waiting for a long time. And just as an aside, the Rolling Stone magazine can kiss my butt, all right? I just had to throw that out there. Those people who know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. I ain't going to give them any credit or any... I'll just leave it at that. A couple of Rolling Stone interview people in here, and they turn out a trash piece. But what do you expect? Anyway, but this next gentleman, and the reason I mention that is because there was an article that was John, the producer, had given me on E. Howard Hunt from the Rolling Stone, titled "The Last Confession of E. Howard Hunt," and I read it. I'm so glad Howard Hunt is here, or St. John Hunt is here. So glad St. John Hunt is here, and he's here with something very important. He has a letter, an open letter, to Carolyn Kennedy. Now listen carefully to what I'm saying to you. An open letter to Carolyn Kennedy. I don't know if he's ever read this in public before, but it's just going to be a conversation between St. John Hunt, the son of E. Howard Hunt, and Dorothy Hunt, and us, and the other 80,000+ listeners right now live, and however many downloads that we get after that, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. So it'll be on this platform that he's reading an open letter to Carolyn Kennedy. But the backstory is this. The reason I wanted to bring, and I've been searching to ask, I've been wanting to bring St. John Hunt on, is, and he doesn't know this, but our lives run parallel courses in ways that he would never know. I mean, he lost his mom at an early age, so did I. The relationship with his father is just a very interesting relationship, and I do hope he talks about that. I see a lot of the same traits in the story. And of course, we have listeners that want to hear about the conspiracy, the actual, what St. John Hunt found via deathbed, an evolving deathbed confession. When I say evolving, it was over a period of time, deathbed confession by his father. And I read with interest about his stepmother, about how she did not want this to come out. And I've just, in my heart, I felt for St. John Hunt. And as I read through St. John Hunt's life story, there was something that connected with me. A lot of things that connected with me. And we're close in age, too. We're not that far off in age. And we've had similar paths, with the exception of the CIA, obviously. That's not me. But socially. I look at St. John Hunt as kind of a hero, in a way. And maybe he might object to that characterization. But for him stepping out and saying what he said, and for him attempting to do what he had, and doing what he had done with his father, I give him a lot of credit. And of course, St. John Hunt has written, co-authored a book titled The Bush Crime Family with Roger Stone. He is a successful author and musician. He was born into a spy family. Now, this is the actual script given to me by John. I gave you my personal take on St. John Hunt. And him and I never spoke before. But I feel somewhat of a kinship with him, kindred spirit with him. But both his father, E. Howard Hunt, and his striking multilingual mother, Dorothy Hunt, again, who passed away on December 8th, 1972, and I remember that plane crash. I remember talking to my mom about that. By the way, my mom passed away just less than six years later. My mom did. But I remember talking to my mom about that crash the day it happened. Anyway, his parents had both distinguished careers in the spy craft that spanned decades. St. John himself even assisted in his own way, that is, with some of their covert activity when he was old enough. It was only when he was in his teenage years that he learned, however, the full truth about his parents and the fact that they did not work for the U.S. State Department. And while approaching his death, E. Howard Hunt made a confession about his role in the JFK assassination. Some people take issue to that. Some people will diss that whole thing. They'll make snide comments about it. And by the way, it hurt me in a large sense, knowing Chuck Colson, not personally, but kind of somewhat. It hurt me to see some of the comments made on the obituary of E. Howard Hunt, but that's another matter. I can only imagine. Well, I can't imagine. But, okay. Again, I'm going off script, and I apologize to my audience for that. But while approaching the death, E. Howard Hunt made a confession about his role in the JFK assassination. St. John spent more than 10 years searching for the truth about his father's role and his father's involvement in JFK's death, resulting in the first book, Bond of Secrecy, and his next book, Dorothy, the Murder of E. Howard Hunt's Wife, Watergate's Darkest Secret. Great book, by the way. He explored his mother's life as a CIA spy and her war with Nixon, which he maintains resulted in her being murdered, as do I. But, who cares about what I care about? His website is stjohnhunt.net. And with that, it is my extreme, extreme pleasure to bring on St. John Hunt. St. John Hunt, welcome to the program.
Wow. Well, thanks for having me on your show. I've heard nothing but great reviews about your show and about the way you handle yourself in the show. And thank you for that intro. That was it had me on the edge of my seat. And
well,
it was very touching.
Thanks.
I appreciate the fact that not only do you empathize with the various parts of my life, but you have a kinship with me, and I accept that fully. And I hope this is the beginning of if not a business relationship for your show, but a friendship too, because I'd like to. I'm just a real person. I'm really nobody. I was a normal person that, found himself in this situation. Growing up, everything seemed normal to me because I didn't have anything to compare it to. I mean, I thought all families moved to foreign countries every 2 years or 3 or 4 years, and then moved to another foreign country. I had nothing to compare it to. So finding out that everything I knew was a lie was really kind of devastating for me. And then on top of that, hearing the accusations as a teenager that my father was involved in the murder of JFK and those kind of things, hearing about the various Senate inquisitions that he had to testify in, and the whole Watergate thing where he was in prison for 3.5 years. He was a broken man, but my father taught me and showed me that that you just can't give in. You have to get back up somehow and get your life together. And after years of, and I'll be honest, after years of substance abuse, which I didn't know really what fueled my substance abuse, but for practically 30 years, I abused drugs of different kinds, and I think it was all this Watergate, CIA, JFK stuff that I just couldn't wrap my head around. It was so incredibly vast that it had affected so much of my life, and then. And then I'm left with this huge mystery. Well, who was my father? Who was my mother? What did they really do? Why were we really going to this country and that country and this country? And who were these men that came over to our house and had dinner, and then my father would take them down to his study and the door would close, kind of like a Godfather thing, You watch the door close and then it's like, okay, what's going on in there? So it's all valuable because it's really made me who I am, and I don't let this whole JFK, Watergate, CIA thing dominate my life. But every fall, especially of course around this time of year, I will agree to go on to one or two shows, and I will do one or two lectures at the various JFK conferences in Dallas or in New Orleans in October. I was there. So thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you, number one, for appearing tonight, the 54th anniversary of the JFK assassination. And that, of course, is when America lost her innocence, I think, at least officially. And that to me is, we'll get into that. That's kind of a footnote, however, because But it's just interesting to me, again, St. John Hunt, the man that came out of this spy family, is, to me, a topic, a subject all by itself. And your experiences, the loss of your mom, the growing up in because I know more. I know a lot about you. I feel, not that I'm a stalker, but I was reading about so many articles about how you grew up. And I gotta tell you, that had to be like just, it really had to be, well, I don't even know the word except
traumatic.
Rough. Traumatic. There you go.
Traumatic.
Rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a list of the most stressful events that can happen in one's life. And, of course, one is the death of a parent. Secondly is moving as a child, being plucked out of a secure environment and then thrust into another completely different school. And that's one thing. But for me, I never had a stable environment. For example, I was born in Washington, D.C. Within 6 months, we moved to Japan, where my father was a CIA, like junior station chief at Tsugi Base. And that was 1954 to 1957. And so as a child of 2.5 and 3 years old, I spoke very rudimentary Japanese. So then we moved directly to Montevideo, Uruguay, where I was in a Spanish-speaking culture. Everyone around me spoke Spanish, but I was put in a French-speaking school, and I only knew rudimentary Japanese. So, I mean, it just gets worse from there. I mean, I'm estranged, and you never have... You never know how to make friends. You never learn how to socialize with children of your own age. And this is a subject I'm very interested in pursuing. I want to write a book, which I've started, with the idea of talking about the collateral damage that children face and have to deal with once they find out their parents were CIA black operatives or maybe NSA operatives or any kind of clandestine service to their country. The children, I think, on the whole, the majority really, really suffer. Maybe not as children, but when they come into their adulthood and find out what their parent or parents have been involved in. You know, my father was involved in some bad things. He was just that kind of a guy, you know. And he's the thread that links the OSS in the early part of the CIA through the Guatemalan coup, the Bay of Pigs, the plots against Castro, and then the plots against Kennedy, and on up through Watergate. He's linked in a very strong manner to Operation 40. And, you know, and then there was the blackmailing of President Nixon. So it just you know, the more I dug, the more I researched, the more I found. Like, I never knew that he personally... had meetings with John Rosselli of the American Cosa Nostra, or Sam Giancana, or Santos Traficante, and he did. I didn't realize that when we moved to Spain, it was because they were taking the assassination attempts against Castro off out of this country and moving them to Spain, where they could, you know, maneuver and get around with less notoriety. So, you know, I feel like in one way I was just part of the illusion of my parents being a normal State Department couple. We got to have some kids as part of our cover, so let's have some kids, and then we'll delegate the maids and the servants to take care of the kids while we, as the parents, you know, go off and do our things, you know. And that hurt. But sure. I also understand it was their job, and they felt truly patriotic.
Wow. Well, and I don't doubt the patriotism of your dad, your family. I don't doubt that, you know, one bit. And it's something that we lack today, I think, the patriotism. And I can see where there would be this inner conflict. Perhaps you as a child and, now as a grown adult man, can reflect back on it and see that push-pull kind of tension But wow, okay. Oh, man. So, all right. But by the way, you're, and I want to make sure I get this in. You are a successful musician, a successful author right now. And of course, the book that you have, the latest book that you've written, co-authored with Roger Stone, The Bush Crime Family. Really a great read, by the way.
Thank you.
On your accomplishments. But when I was reading about you, and correct me if I'm wrong, there was kind of a moment in time when you were in a phone booth and suddenly you looked up and you saw, what was it, a billboard with your, you know, the three tramps, apparently, or what was known as the three tramps. And by the way, any of my terminology, I'm not in any way trying to, my terminology is just that, with respect to your father and the images. It's not meant to demean at all. But people would recognize that. But you looked up and you saw this billboard of three men and recognized one as your father. That kind of was your, that moment in time when you realized that, hey, wait a minute, there's something not right here. Is that kind of true? Or,
well,
again, because I have to question what I read in the Rolling Stone.
Yeah, I was on the sidewalk and I was at a phone booth and I was on the phone. And I looked up, and on the side of a telephone pole was a very crude sort of mimeograph, black and white, poster, I guess you'd call it, or a large leaflet, which announced that the CIA had murdered JFK, and a lecture was going to take place at a certain date at San Francisco State University. It was going to be hosted by Dick Gregory, who up until that time I only knew as a comedian, but now apparently he was an activist, and he had determined that E. Howard Hunt murdered JFK. And on this rather crude poster were three photographs, two of whom I didn't really recognize. They were pictures of some old kind of disheveled looking tramp with a hat, and then the middle picture was clearly a picture of my father, E. Howard Hunt. And that just, I mean, I don't know whether I dropped the phone or fainted or whatever, but that was really crazy for me to see that. I mean, so I pulled the poster off the telephone pole. I still have it. It's in storage in California. But that was kind of like, you know, the introduction to the ongoing and continued allegations regarding my father and JFK. And of course, throughout all that time, he denied not only having any knowledge about the JFK assassination, but also not having been in Dallas on that day and not knowing anybody else that may or may not have been involved. And he just, it was no, no, no. He knew nothing, he did nothing, he saw nothing, he heard nothing. But in a trial later on, there was a small periodical on the East Coast that came out with a supposed internal memo, CIA memo, saying from Dick Helms, the CIA chief, stating that at some point we're going to have to find a way to tell the world what Howard Hunt was doing in Dallas. And they printed that. My father sued and won the initial lawsuit, claiming, when someone insults you in public, what is that called? Defamation of character. But then they appealed and they got Mark Lane, a very famous JFK researcher and civil rights lawyer, to represent the small paper. When they put my father on the stand, he just destroyed every single alibi that my father had about where he was on November 22nd. And of course, the alibi that he finally tried to stick with was that he was at home with his children after having gone shopping at a Chinese grocery store in downtown Washington, D.C., with his wife Dorothy, and they came home and they spent the rest of the time with the children for the next 2 days. Well, I was deposed for that inquiry, and I had to honestly say I did never see my dad at the house on that day. And in fact, I remembered my mother saying that he had been in Dallas in just a very brief conversation at the time. It didn't mean anything to me. So in the final analysis, Mark Lane proved that my father had no alibi for that day. So he lost that case. And I think just, you know, he was embittered by all the accusations and, of course, all the notoriety. I mean, if you're a covert agent, you don't want to be your face. You don't want your face plastered all over the newspapers around the country. But that's what Watergate did to him. It also broke his heart because he thought he was dealing with men of a deep, high standard of moral value, and that he was doing things, you know, to protect this country, and they took advantage of him. And I always wondered why my father allowed these men to use him, that he couldn't see their transparency because he was so intelligent, you know. But I think it was his ego that got to him. You know, I'm going to work for the White House. I'm going to, you know, be a special spook, a special spy for Richard Nixon. And in the end, it's what brought Richard Nixon down. And in the end, it's also what killed my mother, because there was this threat, blackmail threat, for continued financial support from the White House, not only for my family, but for the four Cubans who had been arrested at the Democratic National Committee headquarters on June 17th, 1972. And Nixon was paying out money, but then once he got elected in November, the money stopped, and that's when my father and my mother bumped up the severity of the threats, you know, literally saying to Chuck Colson, who was one of Nixon's inside special counsels, that they had evidence that it's going to bring Nixon down. It's going to blow the White House out of the water. And of course, my mother took some of the evidence to Chicago, along with Michelle Clark, who was a CBS anchor, the first black newswoman to become an anchor for a major media CBS. And they knew my mother was going on that flight. They bugged our phones. Everybody, we all knew that as children. They followed us, everybody around. It was crazy. And they brought the plane down. I mean, the plane crashed. She died. The evidence was taken. And my father kept his mouth shut right after that and pled guilty 3 days later. And just that was it.
I heard the telephone call. I don't recall. I know it was one party was Nixon. I think the other party was Colson. Colson talking to Nixon about the plane crash and about the judge, you know, having a heart to take your dad out of the loop at that moment because of, I mean, the timing is just horrible. And
yeah, yes, it was.
By the way, here's our plan. We have a network break at the top of this hour. As a matter of fact, in about a minute, we're going to go to a 3-minute network break, and then we're going to forego any further network breaks just to give you the most time for the rest of the remaining hour to tell the story. But that is so, you know, again, the trauma against your, the trauma against your dad, the trauma against you and your entire family. From the plane crash, from the loss of your mom, so traumatically, and of course Michelle Clark as well, and what you mentioned about the plane crash, the FBI being on site within minutes, really long before the fire department ever got there or first responders ever got there, just so crazy. We're going to pick up on the other side of this network break. Our very special guest is a man that I do have a lot of I feel a camaraderie with, and I have a lot of respect for, and that is St. John Hunt, the son of E. Howard Hunt. We're going to be right back. Global Star Radio Network, BTR, YouTube, all platforms. Thanks for joining us on this day before Thanksgiving 2017. Very historic day. And also remember, St. John Hunt has a message, open letter for Carolyn Kennedy. Stay with us.